while you are online, please take a moment or two to vote for the show. Go to TalkStreamLive.com. When you get there, real simple, click on the name of the show, the Global Freedom Report, the name of the network, the Micro Effect Broadcast Network. Voila, you're done. You can do that two times each hour from your IP address. And by the way, this is important because you're making a statement. We are in competition with mainstream broadcasters. Thanks to your votes, we normally come in the ratings ahead of them in our time slot. So vote, vote often, and thank you for your support and participation. Obviously, the big news is what's been going on in England. And we have on the line with us, live from London, Tony Goslin. Tony is an investigative reporter for the BBC. You may have seen him on Russia Today. He also is the producer and host of Friday Drive Time, a weekly political show airing on Bristol Community FM radio. Tony, thanks for joining us here on the Global Freedom Report.
Hi, Brent. First of all, just a couple of quick corrections. I'm actually in the wilds of rural Gloucestershire today, which is the Cotswolds, which was the sort of cradle of the Industrial Revolution back 300-400 years ago. And also, I'm not currently working for the BBC. I mean, you know, I worked there about 10 years ago. I was a radio reporter for about 3 or 4 years and a researcher. And I'm not with the BBC anymore. I'm a former BBC journalist. So,
okay. No problem at all. What we really
my main
is that you're there. We're not.
One of my main jobs since then has been looking very, very carefully at the 7/7 London bombings, pulling up the pieces and exposing the privatisation of all of the security systems on the London Underground. So, you know, I was working actually at the BBC during the IRA bombing campaign back in the early 1990s, and when the 7/7 whole thing happened, I really felt it was my job, even though I wasn't working for them anymore, to make a big fuss about the appalling coverage of those attacks and some of the lies which were being told to the British people and people around the world about what actually really happened back on the 7th of July 2005.
Oh, yeah.
But as you've seen,
there's a lot going on here in England right now. Tony?
There's a lot of stuff going on in England here right now, which has been kind of brewing up under the surface, really, for a long, long time. And I think it's important, what I'd like to do is try and give some of the context of this, because what we're getting, lots of sound bites, lots of, you know, sort of eye candy footage of youth smashing up shops, this kind of thing. The crucial side of all this is, what is the context? And, of course, the context is a much wider thing. It's the fact that the IMF austerity measures privatisation of the government, essentially. I mean, they're privatising just about everything. They're now, the government is almost being privatised to make way for the success and the survival of these...
Tony, let me stop you a second, okay? Because I'd rather this be a dialogue than a monologue, and I want to ask you some very specific things so we can get a good picture of what actually is happening. We can get to the motivations a little later on. But initially, all we really have to go on are, most people, what they see on CNN and Fox and that kind of stuff. So can you give us an overview as of now? Last we heard, there was talk of martial law in London. We've heard of it, the riots expanding to 5 or 6 outlying communities. Can you give us an update on what is actually going on in the general region as opposed to what people are being told is going on?
Well, certainly, the police are now getting to grips with the situation. I think the first few days they weren't, and I'm not entirely sure whether that's deliberate or not, because the whole thing was sparked, as you may know, last week by the killing of a ethnic minority black guy in Tottenham in London by the police, and lies were told on the day about the way he died. Police press office telling everybody, the press and the public, that he had shot first, whereas it's now proved that the first bullet that was fired was actually a police bullet, and so that's obviously angered people. But what happened that evening was quite a lot of looting going on. This is a Saturday night, in and around North London. What happened was the police seemed to be so focused on trying to control the press situation and to concentrate on defending their reputation that they forgot to do their job, which is to stop looting. And because the signal went out across the country that the looting had been going on in North London with impunity, this started really spreading it around the different parts of the country. So that's certainly what I've seen. But, I mean, we see a lot, for example, in Bristol, where I live most of the time, which is very close to here, to Gloucestershire, We had an overblown press response, shall we say. Lots of pictures of one or two cars burning from different angles. And actually, this is not totally uncommon. So, first of all, I think that the things that have been going on in London have been really sparked by a complete lack of police response to this initial killing on Thursday. But this has been copycatted across the country because people have seen, young people particularly, very much disenfranchised and betrayed generation, have seen the way that people have got away with it in Tottenham, in North London, with looting, smashing up shops, burning, this kind of thing, and they just go out to do it because it seems that the police aren't active. Now, the last couple of days, the police have really got out in a very, very powerful presence out on the streets. Every couple of hundred yards, a large van filled with police ready to go, and this, of course, is very successfully dissuading a lot of these youngsters doing.
Hang on, let me ask you. It sounds like what you're saying is that there isn't really a unifying cause. It's just, you know, people are saying, hey, you know, we got riots going, let's go get something for ourselves. It doesn't sound like this is some kind of a movement.
Well, there is a lot of resentment against the police brewing up under the surface. This is really important to understand here in Britain. I mean, I really don't know about the situation in the US, but we have a horrendous rate of deaths, particularly of ethnic minority people in custody here in Britain.
Yeah, so do we in the US. So do we in the US.
Yeah, there's something like 340 in the last 12 years of these unexplained deaths without a single conviction of anyone from the police for any of these deaths. So that, of course, leaves a lot of resentment, and it makes it look as if, well, it clearly shows, in fact, that police are above the law, that they're told by their betters, you know, the chief police and by the criminal justice system, that if a policeman kills somebody, that they will be looked after. This is a really dangerous message, you know, and it really undermines the rule of law. And this also seeds resentment. And on top of that resentment, we've got these austerity measures now, with many youth centres across the country being closed. I mean, after the Conservatives were elected last May, all of the budgetary changes have been implemented really since May this year, in April and May this year. And so this is really now kicking in right across the country. It has been for the last few months. So this is one of the other reasons why the young people feel resentful. On top of that, you've also got the massive betrayal at the general election, because for a lot of youngsters, sort of 18 years old, this may have been the first time that they've got involved in elections, many of them voted for the Liberal Democrats, who actually did a secret deal before the election with the Conservative government to hike up the tuition fees up to £9,000 a year, really putting an education out of the reach of almost all young people. Also taken away something called the Education Maintenance Allowance. And so for a lot of youngsters, there really is a big question in their mind about, where is the future for me? Is there a future for me? So they're a betrayed generation, and they're fighting back. I mean, I think this is pretty fair to say that they see this as a bit of a game and a war. And also, of course, they've been brought up on a lot of these video games. So these are some of the reasons why this is happening now, I think.
That's an excellent point. Let me ask you this. One of the common threads through many of the stories being spread around the British riots is that the violence started because a bunch of anarchists decided to invite people using social networking sites like Facebook and Twitter. My question is, that A, is that true to your knowledge? And B, do you think that that might be the kind of excuse that the government's looking to tighten controls on the internet?
Well, it is total codswallop, as we call it here. It's absolute nonsense. The whole thing was sparked by this death of Mark Duggan last Thursday afternoon, who was shot in the chest with a dum-dum.
They said that the protests were peaceful until a bunch of anarchists started making it violent.
I don't think that's actually the case. It's not just anarchists. This is a genuine feeling of resentment against the police, particularly by marginalised, by the poor, and that means often in Britain it means black youth. So and also, of course, as I said about there's a simmering resentment about deaths in custody. I think many of these young black people felt But this Mark Duggan was a death too far, particularly because of the lies that have been told to the police. There was a big demonstration at Tottenham Police Station in the evening. The family were begging to get a proper explanation from the police. On Saturday, they got none. And this simmered into resentment. It was horrendously mishandled by the Metropolitan Police, who are also right in the middle of this phone hacking scandal right now, where there are serious question marks over many of the most important squads in the Metropolitan Police, particularly the anti-terrorist squad and the drug squad, are still, by many, considered criminal elements within our police force. So you can see why that there is actually some kind of justification for these young people resenting the presence of the police, particularly when they've been lied to about the murder of a black man. I mean, actually, if you want to arrest somebody, this is the worst way you can do it, especially if you believe they've got a gun, is to surround the cab, a mini cab that they're in, and force them into that sort of situation. What you do is you get a few plainclothes officers and you come up very close to them and you arrest them that way. It seems to me that the police really want these kind of spectacle confrontations, and they really got to change their tactics if they actually are serious about policing London and keeping the peace. So they have to go to jail when they commit murder.
If indeed what you're saying is true, I have no reason to doubt it. It reflects what's happening in the U.S., and we've come to start calling it the police states of America, because, like you said, when the police protect themselves, when they say, don't worry, whatever you do, nobody's going to prosecute you, no court's going to convict you, then essentially that's what you've got, the police states of Britain. Do you think that the stories being spread about Facebook and Twitter are some kind of a ploy to further, you know, to exert controls on the internet? Is the British government trying to do that kind of stuff? I know they are in the U.S.
It may be, but to be honest with you, I mean, these are basically just gangs of young kids. I mean, we're talking about sort of anything from the age of 12 up to maybe 20, and they're running around with their hoodies on, and they don't really need to be using Facebook and Twitter, because they're in groups of sort of 10, 20, 30, and they're running from street to street. As soon as they see a police van, they then peg it in the opposite direction as fast as they can, and there may be a little bit of mobile phone communication going on, but the idea that this whole thing is being orchestrated through Twitter and Facebook, I think, is just ridiculous. I mean, to a certain extent, some of the young people are maybe getting together that way and setting off to do the looting, possibly, but then once they're actually out there, it should be a situation completely normally where the police have them under surveillance, and as soon as they actually see them doing anything, then they can move in and arrest them. So I don't see that there's any reason why the police or anyone else should need any other measures to stop these people doing this and to bring them to justice. And, you know, if they're going to bring these looters to justice, I mean, for a lot of these young people, they actually see the establishment as a bunch of looters too. You know, so this, in a way, that's partly why this is a copycat thing. They see the establishment and particularly the banking fraternity as looting the wealth of the nation, and they can see through a lot of the lies that are being told through the mainstream press here to do with the causes of the financial situation and their youth clubs being closed down. And I think that they're actually quite often quite intelligent youngsters, but they are very, very resentful against the system that they see has totally sold them out and betrayed them, because it is so difficult for young people to get an education or a job nowadays.
And it sounds very much like it's just becoming apparent that there's a double standard. There's the us and them. There's the, you know, the aristocracy and the commoners. If you're a commoner, too bad. If you're an aristocracy, you can do no wrong.
I mean, look at David Cameron, for example, and the Bullingdon Club. I mean, I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, your listeners are familiar with it, but, you know, at Eton and at Oxford, many of these present politicians, there's four, five in the present cabinet, plus many other characters around, like Nathan Rothschild and Boris, who's the Mayor of London, were all in this little Bullingdon Club in Oxford, and many of us also, of course, went to Eton. More than half the cabinet are actually millionaires. So the young people obviously feel a bit of resentment. But they've also been sold this lie through the media that they can be celebrities, that they can be footballers. And they're seeing now that all this is being thrown back in their face and that there's very few prospects for our young people. And I think really there's been a crisis in leadership, that this most important generation that's up and coming now has been totally abandoned by the present political leadership, particularly by the Conservatives. And many of the things which were provided in the former Labour government, the left-wing government, for young people, things like youth clubs and at least at least making them feel that there was some kind of guilt from the government, that the fact that there weren't enough jobs for them, there was something being done. That's all gone with the Conservatives and with the Bullingdon Club. So this elitist system we've got now is really seen by, even by many Conservatives, that they don't like the Cameron style of government. This guy's a sort of a bit of a thug as well as a bit of a toff. And the people that he hangs out with in these former Bullingdon Club people are extremely elitist. Actually, the Conservative Party is, in a way, most of the grassroots of the Conservative Party is rather embarrassed by Cameron's arrogance, and also, of course, doing things like this ridiculous war in Libya, which we can't afford. Even the Conservatives are all saying we can't afford this.
Yeah, well, hey, you know, I mean, what you're saying, you're speaking to my heart, because same things that we're saying about what's going on in the United States, in the police states of America. Let me ask this. Now, you're speaking about the youth, the current generation of youth in England. What about the older generation? What about the rest of the general public? How are they, in general, viewing these antics? Is this like, you know, we wish it would stop, or we support their cause, or what are people saying about it?
Well, there's a sort of resentful sympathy amongst some people, but for most people, there's a lot of anger against the young people, which, of course, people like Cameron are ruthlessly exploiting. But there is actually also an understanding that there are wider problems, particularly with this whole thing of deaths in custody, and unless that is sorted out, then we are going to end up with a real serious kind of civil war on our hands on the streets between the impoverished, mostly minority populations, and also, of course, the impoverished white populations getting together with those and basically fighting for a bit of an equal part of the pie. I mean, we've got the situation in Britain, I mean, as you have in the US, in the US it's a bit different because the land was taken off the Native Americans, but we've had our land slowly stolen off of us over generations, and even people will boast about owning their own home here. Many of them actually don't. Of course, banks own their home. And we need to have equal, at least more equal, access to the basic resources that we need. You know, more homes being built. Cameron and the Conservatives have reined back that. And all these kind of basic social justice, it seems to be going out of the window with Cameron. This is why I come back to the Bullingdon Club, because these people are not normal Conservatives. They're like, I mean, you're Republicans over there. They are very, very hard line. And they do seem to see that they are sort of almost like kings, that they tell the people what to do. They don't listen.
Yeah, I call that type of official those who would rule the world.
Exactly. They are completely failing to capture the spirit of the age and the spirit of the nation. And I think, you know, there's a sort of soullessness about it. They're treating the population like a bunch of idiots. And even within the Conservative Party, there's a lot of resentment against David Cameron, and they don't feel that he's doing a very good job. And it may well be that we see him kind of elbowed out even by the Conservatives, because he's not a very popular man, particularly because he spent, another 4 days it took him to get back to actually do something about this. I mean, everyone was calling for him to come back, and he was saying, well, no, I'm staying on my holiday whilst the country burns.
Don't you have a no-confidence provision with your parliament?
We certainly do. It'll be interesting to see what happens. You know, tomorrow we've got the parliament is being recalled, so we have all the MPs going back up to Westminster to talk about all this. So we shall see. And also, of course, you know, the Liberal Democrats are in a very important position at the moment because they hold the balance of power in Britain. What's happening is they're not really using it. The leader of the Lib Dems, Nick Clegg, is a sort of toady. He's kind of, shall we say, a fag. This is the expression from public school. He's a little boy that runs around for David Cameron, and David Cameron is the head boy. That's the kind of attitude we've got. If you go back a couple of centuries, I mean, it's almost like these public school boys, you know, from their little clubs have come right the way up into now ruling the country. If you go back a couple of hundred years in Britain, we had something called the Hellfire Club. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it was actually basically a club which was secretive, and it involved prostitution, And it involved also the main member of that club was the Chancellor of the Exchequer of his day. But many people in Britain are drawing parallels between this Hellfire Club, which was this kind of satanic club based in High Wycombe, which the Chancellor of the Exchequer was a member of, and the present government with the Bullingdon Club, a kind of cult running the country. So, you know, I don't know how long it's going to last. I think David Cameron, the present Conservatives, would be very, very lucky to see out their full four-year term.
There was a movie made some 20 years ago. I think it was called The Star Chamber, and I believe it was kind of supposed to be a fictional representation of your Hellfire Club, I think.
Yeah, but it's funny, isn't it? Because the guy was Sir Francis Dashwood of his day, who was the Chancellor in the Hellfire Club. He was extremely unpopular, and he only lasted for about a year as Chancellor because he made too many cuts. So, the parallel between George Osborne, who was also in the Bullingdon Club, and the cuts that he's making should be obvious to most people. You know, how long is he going to last if he keeps doing this to the country? And basically bombing us back to the Stone Age without bombs, you know. What's happening is slowly but surely the things that make us a civilized nation, caring for the elderly, educating young people, it's all going out the window. And something else that's not helped is the really removal of education from schools over the last 30 years. Slowly but surely, it's actually, you know, it's one of those things which has now gone from most schools. Young people are brought up really without a proper moral education.
Let me stop you there, Tony. We're out of time. But I want to know, is there any way people can, if they want to find out more about what you're doing over there, is there any way people, do you have a website or something people can go to?
Yeah, well, I do a couple of websites. One is a forum site where we discuss almost everything that's controversial in the news.
Go ahead and give it out. We're going to run out of time.
Okay, that's 911forum.org.uk.
911forum.org.uk. Excellent.
And you can catch the radio show at thisweek.org.uk.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Tony Goslin. And I sure, I'm encouraged to know there's someone like you over there talking about what needs to be said. Thanks a lot. We really appreciate it.
Okay, Brent, thanks very much for having me on. Cheers.
Tony Goslin, investigative reporter, former reporter for the BBC. We'll be back with hour number two of the Global Freedom Report. Don't go away.